now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Alrighty. Good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding your courage to reclaim that which has always been in you and helping you find the courage to reclaim that which you have always been. Yes, we are eternal souls. We are vast souls. But what does that mean in today's day and age? We will definitely get to that. So I am very happy to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So, just wanted to say for people who are tuning in for the first time that each and every week these broadcasts focus on this integration of spirituality and our mental health, all within the context of our relationships, because it doesn't matter what we do or and so forth in this world, is like we can't get out of relationships. We are social creatures. And so I always say that, it's within our relationships where we experience some of our deepest emotional, mental, physical, even spiritual wounds. But it's also as we heal and we get into healthier relationships, that's where we find our greatest healing. It's kind of an unlearning, relearning again. So we can heal from mental health wounds or emotional wounds or physical wounds or even spiritual wounds. Absolutely. So this is why I focus, this integration of spirituality on and our mental health within the context of our relationships, especially the relationship that we have with ourselves, the relationship that we have with others, and certainly the relationship that we have with God or the divine. Okay, so as I said, we can certainly discover many things about ourselves as well as discover the healing from those mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual woundedness. So one thing that you definitely have to keep in mind that transformation is ongoing because when we transform, we also find that we can transform others by our presence or our grace and understanding. So first and foremost, transformation begins with us. I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I invite you to visit that website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. Okay, that's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. All one word there. And certainly these broadcasts are in podcast form so that you can go back and you can listen again, or you can even go in and browse the archives for our previous shows. And so just in case you cannot spend the entire hour with me this evening, these broadcasts, as I said, you can go back and listen to them, or you can even go back into the archives and you can download these as well from iTunes, Audible, Amazon Music, and certainly Spotify. But if you would like to be part of tonight's show, I invite you to call that toll-free number. It's 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I will be taking your calls after the break because I certainly want to hear your thoughts on tonight's subject, the perspiration of inspiration. Just breathe. All right. Well, before we get into that, I just wanted to give you a quick update regarding the last broadcast subject on supporting people who organized a protest to stop the development of the mother-baby home in Bessborough, County Cork, Ireland. As I had shared in the last show that I had gone over there and I had walked those grounds and made several friends and found out that they were having a protest because now the land has been sold to a developer. And they still believe that there are unaccounted for babies who are there. In fact, the ex-residents and the campaigners have long objected to previous attempts to develop this site, fearing that it could encroach on the burial sites that have yet to be found. And so a total of 923 children who died at the mother baby home in Bessborough, unaccounted for. But what they have accounted for was only about 64 known graves. So where are the others? Well, that's what, they want to find out. So if a developer gets in there, he or she has the right to do with the land whatever they choose and can build right over top of it and now never know if there are mass children's graves there or not. So I know that a petition, I think, is going to be filed with proper authorities, and we're going to see what happens next. I also know, talked to a person over there today, and I know that the members of the Dáil are on Easter. They're on Easter break next week. So the earliest we might hear something is going to be in about 2 weeks minimum, I would say. So I'll keep you posted. And again, if you want more information about the backstory of this Mother Baby Homes protest in Bessborough, you can look up the articles. Plenty of articles published by the Irish Examiner, or you can go on the Survivors of the Mother Baby Homes group website. And there's certainly enough there to read and become well educated in this manner. So, again, welcome. For those of you who are tuning in for the first time, I just wanted to say that, as I do at the beginning of these broadcasts, I just share my philosophy in life that I am certainly a firm believer that all of us come into the world already equipped and graced with everything we need for in this life, in terms of our giftedness or our skills, our talents, our strengths, our character traits, so on and so forth. And yet, as we go along in life, and I think this is no shock to anybody, and maybe even due to some unpleasant experiences, we may tend to hide our giftedness, because we just might feel as though we need to push our giftedness or our skills way down so that others cannot see it. Or perhaps you were told that you would never amount to anything, or whatever other voice you heard telling you that there's really nothing special to you. And that's just not true, because at any rate, we do not realize our giftedness when we start listening to these other voices and we hide our giftedness. And we often go through life then functioning from a place of woundedness or a place of victimhood rather than from a place of healing and wholeness, and certainly embracing our hachiatas, this uniqueness that everybody has. Or as I explained it to kids, it's like there's your thumbprint, that's your hachiatas, that's your uniqueness, that's your thisness. Everybody has a thumbprint, but no two are alike. Therefore, you can have two people do the same thing or play the same instrument or whatever it might be, and they're going to do it slightly different because they're doing it according to their thisness or their hachiatas. Okay, so certainly, with that in mind, please understand that there is so much more to you than what you have become so far. And really, this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about, finding that courage to be able to reclaim that which you have always been. And again, remembering that, remembering who you truly are as that soul. Well, my teacher, beautiful painted arrow, Joseph Rael, who was from the Tiwa-speaking Pueblo people in Picaris, New Mexico, he states that if we humans are going to evolve in our understanding and awareness, we certainly need to understand the vastness of who we are as souls. We need to understand that vastness so that we can become that vastness, so that we can portray it by how we live. And live from that place of high potential. And everybody has that potential. Everybody has it within them to be able to discover who they are and to understand themselves as that vast soul. So understanding exactly what inspiration is, okay, and including how it activates the higher mind, let's just say, to interact with and complement our brain. So, in other words, keep in mind tonight that inspiration is in everything. And one of the things that I've experienced just in teaching and counseling others is that given the conditions of the world today, you know, many people are struggling to find meaning and purpose and direction in their lives. And as with most initial thoughts and feelings and behaviors, there's often an underlying issue that, you know, is starting to kick up, you know, that's coming from this sense of hopelessness. Or maybe it's coming from a sense of fear or anger in people. And what I've discovered is that one of these underlying issues is certainly a loss of inspiration. You know, because I often hear from people that they feel stuck in life, that they lack motivation, or they lack this drive or this determination. It's just, I don't know what to do. And where there is a seeming loss of inspiration, there's also a loss of creativity and courage. And this is what keeps people stuck. They just don't know what to do, but they're struggling to find something creative. But again, where do you find that hope? You know, because hope and inspiration often go hand in hand. So I think it's essential that we take a closer look at inspiration and with the hope that you rediscover yours. Well, again, beautiful painted arrow, Joseph Ryle, he studied mysticism. And he often just shares in his many books that inspiration in and of itself is vibration, namely breath, matter, and movement. Or in his language, wamachi, breath, matter, movement. And therefore, inspiration is always within you. It's always around you. You don't have to go anywhere to find your inspiration. It is within you. You have that creativity, plus many, 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 many awesome gifts that you have brought into this world. So inspiration, as I said, in and of itself is vibration, which is breath, matter, and movement, wamachi. And it is embedded in the created world. So let's just say, for example, when God spoke, as in the creation narrative, you know, that was inspiration in terms of wamachi, breath, matter, movement. You know, and inspiration is something that we come into the world with, just like we come into the world with our gifts and graces and skills and talents. And inspiration is always within us and waiting for us to tap into it and manifest something life-inspiring and life-giving to others. In fact, if we are paying attention when this occurs, we'll discover that God inspires us to go beyond our self-imposed limitations. Okay? Now, let me give you a good example of this. You know, how do you find your inspiration? Well, I'm often reminded of an African story about Ubuntu, U-B-U-N-T-U, Ubuntu. Now, this word Ubuntu is a Bantu term meaning humanity, and it's often translated as I am because we are, or humanity towards others. But Ubuntu is primarily used in a more philosophical sense to mean this belief in a universal bond of sharing that connects all of humanity. I'll say that again. It's a belief in a universal bond of sharing that connects all of humanity. So, in other words, you know, there is no differences in us, even though, you know, diversity is, you know, something that we see all the time. But when we break it down, we have such a connection to one another because at the end of the day, we're all souls. We're all souls. But, you know, the body gives form to that soul. and where we are raised, and education and all of that goes into it. But those things are supposed to be for the betterment of humanity. So Ubuntu, the belief in a universal bond of sharing that connects all of us, is definitely right on. And there's this incredible practice that's observed in many South African communities. So let me just read this story to you, and you'll see what I mean. Okay? In certain regions of South Africa, when someone does something wrong, he's taken to the center of the village, and he's surrounded by his tribe for 2 days while they speak of all the good he has done. They believe each person is good, yet sometimes we make mistakes, which is really a cry for help. They unite in this ritual to encourage the person to reconnect with his true nature. And the belief is that unity and affirmation have more power to change behavior than shame and punishment. And this is known as Ubuntu, humanity towards others. And that's a powerful story, true story. It's pretty incredible. In fact, the more I think about this story, the more I just cannot help but be inspired by the depth of this word, Ubuntu. Now, let's just imagine for a minute, being the one who's caught doing something wrong, okay? And you are then placed in the center of your community. Okay, it could just be your neighborhood or whatever, but just a larger community, or maybe even your faith community. And let's say they sit you down in a town square, okay? And all of your family members and friends and colleagues and acquaintances have an opportunity to speak glowing affirmations about all they see in you and all the things that you have done in a good sense and all the blessings that you have been for other people. I mean, not for 2 minutes or 2 hours, but for 2 days, 48 hours, you are told and you are shown your very best self from the eyes of those who know and love you. Now, this isn't done to dismiss the wrong that you have committed, but to remind you that there is more to you than perhaps you realize, but often show to others when you think no one's watching and listening. In fact, you never know how you're going to inspire another person, because people are always watching, they're always listening. This isn't kind of like a big brother kind of thing. It's just people watch. People pick up on things. Ubuntu, the belief in a universal bond of sharing that connects all of humanity. I am because we are. You are because we are. And imagine coming away from that ritual after 2 days. Would we afterwards be so inclined to go out and commit another wrongdoing? I would say not likely. And in fact, you may be so inspired by what others see in you that you vow right then and there to show others only the very best of yourself in everything that you do and everything that you speak. That's the transforming power of Ubuntu. That's the life-giving presence of inspiration. Because at that point, you realize how connected you are to others, that every thought, every word, every action affects everyone else on some level and to some degree. You see, we often don't understand the ramifications of our thoughts and words and deeds and that they have on others. In fact, this is kind of where the idea of self-inflicted wounds come from, that we don't often realize that whenever we harm somebody else, we're harming ourselves. And that whenever we want to keep somebody else trapped or controlled, we're actually trapping ourselves. We're keeping ourselves controlled. And when we create prisons of resentment and contempt and ridicule towards others, we're also keeping ourselves locked away in a prison of bitterness and self-loathing and remorse. So, in the immortal words of the rock band, the Eagles, how often do we live our lives in chains, and we never know we have the key. Now, that's a great line of a song, but it is definitely a truism in our lives. We often keep ourselves locked away, and we know what leads to freedom, but we just don't do it. Well, anybody out there in internet radio land ever see the movie Pay It Forward? Okay. And it came out somewhere around 2000. Okay. Again, great movie, great movie. So if you're ever wondering what to watch this weekend, bring it up. You'll enjoy it. It was a movie that did come out in 2000 and was set in Las Vegas. And so you can, I think last time I saw it was on Netflix. Now, the story begins with a school teacher giving his students an assignment to come up with a plan that will change the world for the better. Okay. And he let them, you know, come up with ideas and tap into your creativity, be inspired by your own things that you want to change in the world for the better. So one of his students, Trevor, you know, he devises a charitable program based on the interaction of good deeds. And he calls his plan Pay It Forward, which means that the recipient of a favor must also now do a random favor for three other people, rather than keeping that favor all to themselves. Now, the catch is that this favor must be something the recipients cannot do themselves. Okay, so this is a true gift in and of itself. Okay, so for example, in the movie, Trevor does a favor for three people, asking each of them to pay it forward by doing random acts of kindness or favors for three others, and so on. And Trevor's first good deed was allowing a homeless man to live in his garage. And then this man paid it forward by fixing Trevor's mom's car. And this homeless man also paid it forward by later talking to a suicidal woman who was about to jump off a bridge. And so forth, and so forth, and so on. I mean, you get the idea. I mean, I'm not going to share the rest of the movie, but I'm going to let you watch it for yourself if you've never seen it. You know, but talk about inspiration. And I'm sure we all have heard inspiring stories of how one person or a group of people has overcome incredible odds to achieve their dreams and improve the lives of others, often just by working behind the scenes, so to speak. Well, to be quite honest, the first time I ever heard the word inspiration was in the movie Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. You know the scene, okay? It's when Wonka spoke about inspiration. And he says, well, you know, let's talk about invention. Invention, my dear friends, is 93% perspiration, 6% electricity, 4% evaporation, and 2% butterscotch ripple. I don't know what butterscotch ripple has to do with it. Yeah, whatever. I prefer like a good cherry lifesaver. But this quote by Gene Wilder was a nod actually to Thomas Edison, you know, who was quoted saying, I haven't failed. I've just found 10 ways, you know, 10,000 ways not to do it. I found 10,000 ways that just don't work. You know, so I haven't failed. I'm still continuing on. And it's, you know, humorously, this whole thing suggests that creativity involves a significant amount of hard work and experimentation, along with a small amount of luck and comedic elegance. And if you want to, add some butterscotch ripple. So how many times have you felt inspired in your life? Okay. How many times you felt inspired? How many times have you felt inspired to do something for another person with no expectation of the outcome, no anticipation of what you think might happen, just some random acts of kindness or service or doing something that benefits everyone? Well, my Hindi friends refer to this inspiration devotion as bhakti, B-H-A-K-T-I, bhakti. And this kind of inspiration is couched in an act of devotion with no thought of recognition. And you see, living out your relationship with God is more than a one-way relationship, but inspiration compels us to be intentional in our devotion within everyday relationships through, let's say, service or meeting the needs of others or simple acts of kindness, all without being affected by the results. All, the while not worried about, well, will they see it? Who's going to notice it? Will I get a pat on the back? Will they say thank you? No, we do simply because it's the right thing to do. Because I'm sure that you've heard of the expression, well, it's just a thankless job. Well, think about it this way. Perhaps on a deeper level, this saying just actually might be a compliment. Okay, think about it. What would happen if you reframed that statement from having a thankless job to the work that I do for others on some level and to some degree has a positive and life-changing effect on everybody's life? Okay, remember Ubuntu? We are connected to one another. Any effect has some measure of I am because we are, or this humanity towards others. Okay, the philosophical sense of Ubuntu, the belief in this universal bond of sharing that connects all of humanity. So, in other words, there is no need to worry about whether an act of kindness will be received well or that others will notice your generosity, whatever it is. What's more important is that through the process of being and doing, we're certainly careful to protect ourselves just from becoming indifferent, let's say with a lack of interest or concern or becoming apathetic. Or we also protect ourselves from becoming resentful, feeling bitterness or indignation from not being recognized or thanked. I mean, when we go down those roads of being resentful, for not being seen or indifferent because of like, well, nobody cares anyway, what difference is going to make? We're going to run into some problems. And we start talking like that. That's our ego. That's our ego. And don't listen to your ego, because the ego is jumping around, wants all the attention in the world. And if you're not doing it right, then the ego is going to tell you and you got problems and then nobody likes you. Like, just stop. Don't let the ego take you down just a horrific world and a horrific road where you just spend your time just ruminating on just self-destructive thoughts. Well, perhaps, we expect others to know better and to be taught to be grateful for the kindness shown to them. I mean, we hear this as little kids, like somebody does something for us and like, okay, what do you say? Thank you. Okay, we get that, okay? As long as we don't lose it, we're fine. But perhaps in another person's world, that when some other person shows them kindness, it often comes with strings attached in some transactional, I do for you, now you do for me, power struggle. Because perhaps in doing something kind for another, you just might be the one who models that compassion and understanding with no shame or guilt in giving or receiving. And a classic example of this type of inspiration and devotion is when neighbors come together after a resident, let's say, loses a loved one. And what do? You take over food. You take over casseroles or other meals for a couple of days. Or you check in with the person. How are you doing? And really, I want to know, how are you doing? If there's anything I can do, and please take me up on it. If you need a ride here, I can do it. If you need a ride there, I can do it. Okay? So that's, just a probably an everyday great example of this inspiration and devotion, because you see, being inspired and living a life of devotion to God and others is easier than when, let's say, sometimes, we want to make it more difficult. And my guess is that, you've been doing this kind of inspiration devotion for the better part of your life, But how many times have you ever been asked to pay it forward? Okay, maybe not directly, maybe indirectly. And for that matter, what do we do once we're inspired? And then how do we manifest this inspiration? Well, there's many definitions of inspiration out there, but the one I like best is that inspiration is simply the breath or the Spirit, or as in the very breath of God. And when you place inspiration in this context of the breath of God that goes out and creates, there is this creative element. So again, in the creation stories, you know, God spoke, it was good. God spoke, and it was so. And elsewhere, you know, even in the Spirit of God is often manifested as the breath of God that creates. So breathing is inspiration. In fact, I love this cultural expression of inspiration. It comes from the Maori people of New Zealand, and they have this traditional greeting called hongi or hongi. I got to figure out how to pronounce that correctly. Well, I'll just pronounce it hongi, H-O-N-G-I, hongi, which involves touching foreheads and noses together every time they meet, which allows each other to share the same breath. It's a way of seeing each other on a soul level as equals. We breathe together. Inspiration, the breath of God manifested in the very breath and soul we share with one another. Well, I would really love to hear your experiences of inspiration and paying it forward. So again, if you want to call in the second half of the show, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after this short break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in about 1 minute. All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Well, earlier in the show, you know that we were talking about inspiration and devotion, especially inspiration as the breath of God. And there are other moments in our lives when inspiration really needs time to take root. Just as you plant a seed in the ground, it needs time to take root. And the roots must firmly be anchored in good soil before they break through above ground. And they continue to grow, and eventually they will bear fruit. And this will require patience on our part. Okay, we just can't rush this. You know, it takes time, but it is certainly worth it. So once upon a time, there was this spiritual master who was walking with one of his students, and they were discussing, among other things, spirituality. And the young student was troubled because, as many students are from time to time, he started to be impatient with what he perceived as his lack of spiritual progress. Well, in his mind, he believed that he ought to be further along on his path to truth, and he struggled to find his inspiration. Yeah, he studied hard, he did everything his teacher asked him to do, yet he still felt as though he should be further along. Well, at one point during their walk, the master and the student came to a beautiful rose garden. And the master stopped and smiled as he pointed out the numerous colors and the fragrances of these roses. They were just beautiful. But each one of them were in various stages of development. However, you know, the student didn't fully understand what the master's point was in this lesson. Because, yes, every moment in our lives is a teachable moment for us, if we're paying attention. And yes, there are times when we simply do not grasp how inspiration works in different ways in our lives. Okay, so anyway, the master saw that his student he didn't understand this lesson. So, okay, time for an object lesson. He picks a rose that was just beginning to bloom, okay, and he handed the rose to his student and he asked him to open it. Go ahead, open it. And the student looked curiously at the rose and then gently started to push it open with his finger. And then he used two fingers and so forth. And to his surprise, the more he did this, the rose began to fall apart and no longer resembled any of the other beautiful roses in full bloom. In fact, when he was finished, many petals had fallen to the ground and this rose was ruined. But the master gently smiled as he took the rose back from his student. And he explained to his student that you cannot force roses to bloom because they bloom in their own time. And someday he too will bloom in God's time and through God's grace. And even though roses are still in their buds, let's just say, and they have yet to bloom, they're still roses. Because, you know, when they are connected to their roots and anchored firmly in the ground, they are receiving all the water and nourishment from the sun and the soil. And, of course, you and I both know that when roses have opened and are in full bloom, the fragrance is enjoyed by all because they have reached this point of maturity. And so the student finally understood this lesson. And so, therefore, his role in his studies was then to continue his faithful integration of his knowledge, his personal experiences, and his studies. And he was also to continue to discover his giftedness or his hechaitas, that uniqueness, remember the thumbprint. And he was also to continue to develop his own skills and certainly stay anchored to his roots, to his faith, and upon his spiritual foundation. And by doing all these things and by trusting in God's grace and over time, he too would blossom. Breathe on me, O breath of God. Everyone who comes into this world is truly gifted with many wonderful skills and talents. You cannot tell me any differently. And although two people can do the same job or display the same act of kindness, they will do it differently according to their hechaitas, their uniqueness. And, you know, let's be honest with ourselves, okay? How often do we get caught up in the hurry up to bloom stage and we forget that even in a budding stage, we are growing? And if we're faithful to this integration of inspiration or spiritual practices and our experiences, along with our daily awareness of truth and God's grace and how it works in our lives, transformation is inevitable. Guarantee you. But you know, as a mental health therapist, as a trauma specialist, I also see this kind of impatience in clients who want to hurry through counseling, you know, because after all, they just want to feel better. I get that. I completely understand it. And yet, many times along the way, I have to reassure them that their psychological, their emotional, their spiritual healing cannot be rushed because their healing has to be complete. But still, some people believe that they're doing something wrong because they don't see the changes fast enough. So don't worry. I mean, inspiration will come. And true, you know, many people just want to feel better and as quickly as possible. But truth be told, healing takes time. Transformation takes time. I mean, just think about, the healing that you've gone through, let's say from emotional woundedness or a psychological woundedness or a physical woundedness or even a spiritual woundedness. A lot of healing takes time. We have to grieve those losses of what's been done to us, or even maybe what we have done to somebody else. We have to grieve that, and grief is a process, and making amends is a process. But the more faithful we are to integrating, just continued healing in our lives and making changes and so forth, sooner or later that kind of transformation is going to show up, often through people who see it first. They might say something, like, okay, well, I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it, but you're different. You're talking differently. You're not as hyper, whatever it might be, other people will recognize a transformation in us first. And we just might be the ones who recognize, a person's transformation before they see it in themselves. So when you do, speak on it, encourage them. Say, I don't know exactly what you've been doing, but whatever you're doing, it's showing up in very wonderful and beautiful ways. Encourage them to keep going. Now, many times, a person's, say, spiritual growth occurs when they're engaged in this unlearning, relearning stage. Okay? So, and this is what I mean. People, again, through their woundedness, people will need to unlearn assumptions about how the world or God should work for them. Okay? Again, we carry this assumption. We assume because I do all the right things that things are going to turn out great and I'll get all my needs met and God will answer all my prayers. And what do you do when that doesn't happen? So we have to unlearn these assumptions about how we expect the world to behave or how we expect God to work for us. That's not the case. And people also need to unlearn habits or other behaviors that have led them down very unhealthy, mental, emotional, or spiritual paths, or even physical paths. We need to unlearn those habits. We have to recognize, what are they? We have to become aware of those things in order to do something about it. And for some people, they will need to let go of roles that they took on that have created certain dysfunctions in the family. And I see this a lot in families in which a loved one is just, struggling with their alcoholism. And in order to survive that kind of chaos in the family, other family members take on roles to be able to deal with the chaos. So there's going to be an enabler. There might be the gifted person who wants to do everything to let the family shine so nobody's paying attention to the one who's drunk all the time. Or there might be a person who takes on the role of a lost person, where they just kind of fade into the background. You see them, but you don't hear them, because that's their way of not dealing with the chaos. But when a person who's addicted to alcohol or drugs or pornography or gambling or whatever it is, when they go away to rehab or they get all that stuff out of their system, the family also has to heal from that. The family also has to unlearn those roles that they became accustomed to, because, when a person comes back into the family, there is no more addictions. There is no more chaos. So the family doesn't have to act as if chaos is still here. And so there's healing on both sides of that. And still, other people will need to unlearn sabotaging behaviors based on the relationship wounds that they suffered in the past. Okay. Yet all the while, as people are unlearning these and other unhealthy aspects, they're also going to need to relearn and reclaim those life-giving aspects of themselves. So, in all honesty, folks, if there's one thing I wish that you would take away from this program tonight, it's this. The more faithful we are to life-giving spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical integration, sooner or later, life-giving spiritual, emotional, mental, even physical transformation will occur. And a key ingredient in any manifestation of inspiration is hope, especially when it comes to trying to make sense out of our lives. There's a great quote by Thomas Merton. He was an American Trappist monk, and he was a theologian, he was a mystic, he was a poet, and also a social activist. And if you're familiar with his name, he's the one who wrote The Seven-Story Mountain. And it's about him. You know, it's about his profound conversion story that tells of the just his growing restlessness of just a brilliant and passionate young man. And Thomas Merton, at the age of 26, he takes vows as a Trappist monk. And that whole book captures the essence of hope that is needed along this spiritual journey. Well, he also wrote the book Seize the Day. And in Seize the Day, he has this beautiful, oh gosh, just beautiful, you call it a poem or just a beautiful saying. You know, and he just says, look, I have no idea where I am going. I do not see the road ahead of me. I cannot know for certain where it will end. Nor do I really know myself. In fact, I think I'm following your will doesn't necessarily mean that I'm actually doing so. But I believe that the desire to please you does, in fact, please you. And I hope I have that desire in all that I am doing. Okay, there's the devotion. And I hope I will never do anything other than that desire. And I know that if I do this, you will lead me by the right road, though I may know nothing about it. Therefore, I will trust you always, though I may seem to be lost and in the shadow of death. I definitely will not fear, because I know you are with me. And you will never leave me to face my perils alone. See, what Merton is saying here is that he doesn't need to see where his life will go or where inspiration will take him, because that's not where his hope lies. But rather, his hope lies squarely in the relationship he has with God and certainly with others. You know, but I believe that the desire to please you does, in fact, please you. And I hope I have that desire in all that I am doing. I hope I will never do anything other than that desire. I love that section. It kind of captures it all. But you know, there's another saying out there that says that we can live about 30 days without food. We can live about 3 weeks without water. We can live 3 minutes, give or take, without oxygen. But we cannot live 3 seconds without hope. Hope is that powerful. Hope is that transformative in us and through us. But the true lesson is that we need to examine what we place our hope in. And if you ever find yourself in the middle of a so-called hopeless situation, remember, you just might be the hope others need to be inspired so that they see themselves as being a living hope for somebody else. You know, at this time of the year, I'm always reminded of that there ever was a group of people who exemplify hope on a daily basis. It's farmers. I mean, think about it. They till the soil. They remove the rocks and other obstacles that would get in the way of having a healthy crop. Then they plant the seed and cover it back up with the soil. And all of this is done by faith. Faith in the hope that with the sun, the water, and nature's fertilizers, the seed will produce wonderful crops. Okay? And, you know, this time of the year, February and March, and maybe even April, are often the months when people begin planting seeds or seedling to have plants for later on in the spring and the summer. Everybody needs hope. It's just part of us, something ingrained in us from birth and how we see the world. But what we hope for, and in what we hope for, namely paying attention to inspiration can either bring us misery or it's going to bring us peace. And many people are taught that material things will bring happiness and contentment. Nothing wrong with material things. Okay, we all need food, we all need clothing, we all need shelter, we all need security, we all need achievements to go after, we all need to set goals, and so on and so forth. But I sit down with a lot of people who, by all outward appearances, appear to have it all together. You know what I mean? But inside, they are miserable. And it's true, money doesn't necessarily buy you happiness, and it certainly does not quell the storms that rage within us. So where does this perspiration of inspiration come from? And if we are truly inspired, do we even need to work up a sweat? Well, yeah, we do. Okay, but there's a difference between feeling exhausted at the end of the day versus feeling invigorated but tired. Remember, don't make it harder than what it needs to be. Be the kindness, be the inspiration, and live out your uniqueness for the betterment of everyone. I'm Dr. James Houck, and thank you again for listening to me this evening. Drop me a line. Let me know about your thoughts about tonight's show. And until next time, everybody be safe out there. Everybody be well. And above all, everybody behave yourselves. All right? Take care. Good night.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck. It's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.